Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we have an interview with Sonia. I never found out her last name.
From the Truther Girls.
.com. That's a radio show on American Freedom Radio. They are involved with 911 Truth and
truth in medicine, truth in anything that affects all of us. Truth in flu shots, truth in
politics, medicine,
environment.
Right. And I think you're gonna find her to be quite interesting.
And a very likable person. She gave a great interview.
Yep.
It was like talking to a friend. She's very nice, very personable, very down to earth, but very knowledgeable.
Very knowledgeable. And
their show's out of Montreal, Canada, and
a girl named Karen.
But who is going back to school won't be involved in it
after September, I guess.
Are very interested in a lot of topics, and they search for the truth.
Yeah. So that will be coming up in about half an hour. And in the meantime, I just wanted to, I'm going to read a couple of news items. I'll find out. I don't know what that is.
That was Lou Dobbs.
I know.
I haven't seen him in age.
Yeah. I'll go back and see what he's got to say. Be interesting.
Yeah.
Play video. Come on. God, little cat. As a way of looking here that drives you crazy. Let's see what he's saying. New World Order on CNN.
This is Lou Dobbs Tonight. New debate and opinion for Tuesday, March 3rd. Live from New York, Lou Dobbs.
Good evening, everybody. President Obama and British Prime Minister Gordon today calling for a new world order to tackle our global economic crisis. President Obama said globalization can be an enormous force for good. Prime Minister Brown again pushing for what he calls a global new deal, paid for by the United States, of course. And Budget Director Peter Orszag saying budget deficits could amount to $2 trillion more if Congress doesn't pass the president's budget. Ed Henry reports now from the White House on the summit meeting between President Obama and Prime Minister Brown.
A meeting of the U.S. President and British Prime Minister used to mean talk of war and peace, but it's all about the global economic meltdown now.
My main message to the American people is to just recognize that we dug a very deep hole for ourselves. There were a lot of bad decisions that were made. We are cleaning up that mess. It's going to be sort of full of fits and starts in terms of getting the mess cleaned up. But it's going to get cleaned up.
Prime Minister Gordon Brown is wounded at home and wanted a full-fledged news conference to stand beside a popular new leader. Instead, Brown got a more low-key meeting in the Oval Office. And yet, unlike Tony Blair, he didn't seem to mind being considered the American president's poodle.
And I think the history books will record that what he has done in his first nearly 50 days of office has been momentous in setting the means by which we can see the economic recovery happening.
Brown desperately needs President Obama to help Great Britain deal with the financial crisis.
As far as the common interests that we're pursuing, look, there is the possibility in the next few months of a global new deal that will involve all the countries of the world in sorting out and cleaning up the banking system.
The president pointedly did not make any promises about a global new deal, focusing instead on trying to reassure Americans about 12-year lows on Wall Street.
What I'm looking at is not the day-to-day gyrations of the stock market, but the long-term ability for the United States and the entire world economy to regain its footing.
The stock market was sort of like a tracking pole in politics. Obama is
Miles up and down day to day. If you spend all your time worried about that, then you're probably going to get the long-term strategy wrong.
Was
those only first year.
Now, even as the president has said that he's not following the markets on a day-to-day basis, he did say that prices are so low right now on Wall Street that it might be a good idea for Americans to go out and buy stocks if they're in it for the long term. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs was quick to stress the president was not issuing any kind of official buy signal. Perhaps, though, he's trying to put a little confidence in those sagging markets, Lou.
I'm not sure what you would call that, but the President of the United States, who has pretty much demonstrated he doesn't know much about economics, suggesting people go out and buy stocks, and the last person who does know something about stocks to make such a suggestion was Warren Buffett in October, and since then the Dow Jones Industrials have lost more than 2,000 points. But surely the President will refrain from doing that sort of thing again, one hopes. But I don't quite understand the President's comment about a tracking poll, a political tracking poll, when talking about the markets. Housing values have just collapsed in this country. The credit markets are absolutely resistant to flowing and to opening up. It is not simply a tracking poll called the stock market that we're looking at here, is it?
Lou, there's no doubt that there are many different barometers, and many of them, if not all of them, are pretty bad right now. The president himself has said that many times. He's hoping that he can convince the American people that if he puts his policies in place, it's going to start turning around. Exhibit A would be the stimulus bill, the $787 billion. He went to the Transportation Department today to tout the fact that the first shovel is essentially going in the ground in Maryland near D.C. here today to start work on a road project. But obviously, the proof will be in the pudding. We still have to see whether or not all that money that's being spent is going to turn it around. And there's been heavy criticism the last couple of days of this president, mostly by Republicans, but by some conservative Democrats as well, raising concerns, as you mentioned on the Hill today, with some of those Obama officials about the budget, about the fact that there are some taxes being raised, and there's some spending
taxes
going up
some
as well.
Taxes. Did you say some taxes?
I did say some taxes.
I mean, my God, that budget is filled with new higher taxes. It's off-putting the degree to which Peter Orszag, the president's budget director, is saying that the world will collapse if it isn't immediately passed. The rhetoric of fear has apparently seized this administration, its imagination, as well as its public statements, to the point that only a rush, unthinking approach is acceptable. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, they would insist that it is only a few taxes. For example, capital gains tax rates going up from 15% to 20%. As you know, they're going to let the Bush tax cuts, at least they're proposing to let the Bush tax cuts expire at the end of 2020.
I mean, if I may, this is the same nonsense we've seen with administration after administration, only this one dealing with a real economic crisis, making these absurd projections on economic growth in the midst of what this president is saying. Approaching a catastrophe economically. It makes no sense at all what we witnessed today, at least to my view. Thanks very much, Ed Henry at the White House.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting to see Lou Dobbs. I was very surprised.
I haven't seen him in a long time. We used to watch him on mainstream TV until he lost his show.
Yeah. And it was for reasons like this that he lost the show.
Yeah.
You know, he was
too outspoken.
No, he was telling it the way it was, and you know, and he was absolutely right about that. You know, the Obama fear and the headlines,
mm-hmm.
and I mean the Bush thing. And this was—it's interesting to go back and see history.
Right.
When it was made, but Brown is now defunct. He's
Gordon
he's,
Brown.
He's
gone.
He's gone, and. And Obama, you know, is sinking fast. So, really interesting. Stand up, you gotta laugh. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Unlikely skeptic and foodie. You've got some good videos on.
All kinds of things here.
Rockefeller Foundation scenarios for the future of technology and international development.
The notion of more controlled world gained wide acceptance and approval. Citizens willingly gave up some of their sovereignty and their privacy to more paternalistic states in exchange for greater safety and stability. Citizens were more tolerant, even eager for top-down direction and oversight, and national leaders had more latitude to impose order in the ways they saw fit. In developed countries, the heightened oversight took many forms: biometrics, IDs for all citizens, for example, and tighter regulation of key industries whose stability was deemed vital to national interests. In many developed countries, enforced cooperation with a suite of new regulations and agreements slowly but steadily restored both order and, importantly, economic growth.
That was through the EU until now.
These are scenarios for the future.
Okay. Oh, here we go. Okay. This is from CryptoGon.com. And it says...
In 2012, the pandemic
of tighter top-down government control and more authoritarian leadership with limited innovation and growing citizen pushback. That's what we have. These are the different scenarios, right?
And how they're going to handle it, I guess.
Right. In 2012, the pandemic that the world had been anticipating for years finally hit. Unlike 2009... 12. Okay, so they're predicting a pandemic in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the new influenza strain originating from wild geese was extremely virulent and deadly. Even the most pandemically prepared nations were quickly overwhelmed when the virus streaked around the world, infecting nearly 20% of global population, killing 8 million in just 7 months. Majority of them healthy young adults. The pandemic also had a deadly effect on economies. International mobility of both people and goods screeched to a halt. Debilitating industries like tourism, breaking global supply chains, even locally normally bustling shops and office buildings sat empty for months, devoid of both employees and customers.
Right. At first, the notion of a more controlled world gained wide acceptance and approval. Citizens willingly gave up some of their sovereignty and their privacy to more paternalistic states in exchange for greater safety and stability.
You just read that.
Yeah. Okay, Cleaver together. A world in which highly coordinated and successful strategies emerge for addressing both urgent and entrenched worldwide issues. The recession of 2008-2010 did not turn into the decades-long global economic slide that many had feared. In fact, quite the opposite. Strong global growth returned in force, with the world headed once again toward the demographic and economic projections forecasted before the downturn.
India and China were on track to see their middle classes explode to 1 billion by 2020, and megacities like Sao Paulo and Jakarta expanded at a blistering pace as millions poured in from rural areas. And countries raced to industrialize by whatever means necessary. The global marketplace bustled.
But two big problems loomed. First, not all people and places benefited equally from this return to globalized growth. All boats were rising, but some were clearly rising more. Second, those hellbound on development and expansion largely ignored the real environmental consequences of their unrestricted growth. Undeniably, the planet's climate was becoming increasingly unstable.
Sea levels were rising fast, even as countries continued to build out coastal megacities. In 2014, the Hudson River overflowed into New York City during a storm surge, turning the World Trade Center into a 3-foot-deep lake. And the image of motorboats navigating through lower Manhattan jarred the world's most powerful nations to realizing that climate change was not just a developing world problem.
That same year, new measurements showing the atmospheric carbon dioxide levels were climbing precipitously, created new urgency and pressure for governments, really for everyone, to do something fast.
Now they're claiming this to be in 214.
Mm.
A functioning global cap and trade system was also established worldwide, and pressure to reduce waste and increase efficiency on planet-friendly ways was enormous. New globally coordinated systems for monitoring energy use capacity, including smart grids and bottom-up pattern recognition technology. So, we're rolled out. Now, this is what they see as a scenario for 214, based on the global warming and all this kind of crap that they're pushing. But and that the Hudson River overflowed its banks, like, you know, and flooded New York City. Mm-hmm. That's like, yeah, okay.
Oh, this is quite a long article.
Yeah, the other one was hack attack. Okay, where devastating shock, like September 11th, Southeast Asian tsunami, and the 2010 Haiti earthquake had certainly primed the world for sudden disasters, but no one was prepared for a world in which large-scale catastrophes would occur with such breathtaking frequency. The years 2010 to 2020 were dubbed the Doom Decade for good reason. The 2012 Olympic bombing, which occurred, this is like, I don't know.
This is what they want to happen.
This is what they're saying, yeah. Smart scramble. Economically depressed world in which individuals and communities develop localized makeshift solutions to a growing set of problems. All right? So that's,
Look to see where they want to point you.
Yeah, that's where it goes, you know, and that's what you're looking at. If people are planning your, if you don't plan your future,
people plan it for you.
They plan it for you. And legislation from Irish government, yeah, let's forget that one, okay? Feds to protect drug dispensing postal workers. Federal government is training post. A lot of people have heard this, maybe, but I think it's worth repeating because it didn't make much sense. The federal government is training postal workers in six U.S. cities to dispense anti-terror drugs in the event of a biological attack, with the promise that they will be accompanied by law enforcement officers to protect them from potentially violent crowds. The White House won't name the six cities. And Department of Homeland Security spokesman Amy Kudua says she can't talk about whether more cities are interested in the voluntary program. Reports USA Today, at a cost of $1 million per city, the Department of Homeland Security is training postal workers to dispense boxes of drugs accompanied by flyers telling people what to do in the event of mass casualty attack. Oh, my God. All right. So, yeah. It's like iodine pills. Let's see. About 60% of mail carriers volunteered for a trial run of the program in Minneapolis and were able to reach 205,000 households within 8 hours, with the program set to be expanded to enable it to reach all 735 households in the metro area.
The program is being promoted as a vital and life-saving component of emergency preparedness, helping to get urgently needed drugs out to the elderly and those who cannot easily leave their homes. However, the real intention behind the policy takes on a more ominous tone in light of the fact that President Obama's December 2009 executive order that laid the groundwork for the program included guarantees that the government would protect postal workers from angry American citizens who would react violently to receiving the drugs by ensuring they were accompanied by police officers when dispensing the medication.
This raises the prospect that the government will mandate citizens to take whatever medication is being dispensed, including vaccinations. There appears to be no other explanation as to why the government is preparing for potentially violent crowds in reaction to the supposedly life-saving drug dispensing program. This sounds like a Kool-Aid, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Our government plans to give us Kool-Aid, folks. You know, really interesting. Huh? Hey, look, they got a filter here that cleans out fluoride from showers and bathwater filters. Hey, this is pretty cool. Let me see the name of the place. PureWaterFreedom.com. I want to check this out, folks. I don't usually advertise, but Goodbye Fluoride, full line of household fluoride filters. PureWaterFreedom.com. I'm going to check this out.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? we're thinking we want a full freedom water filtered as well. We have a, we only drink water, filtered water, but I don't know how good it is as far as cleaning out the fluoride and stuff. Luxury powered water. I'm gonna just mention purewaterfilters.com. Just check that out. You know, and they go to the dangers of fluoride and all this kind of stuff. But it's very bad, and they're not that expensive. Some of them are.
The ones, it's hard to get fluoride out though.
Very hard, yeah. There's one for $39.99. Pure Water Filter presents the world's finest stainless steel. You can drink through the Act 2 Sports Stop. That's a, like a bottle. Yeah, I'm looking for something on the faucet there.
You went by it.
Oh, six-stage house fluoride water filter. Crying a lot. $2,500, folks, for a household water filter.
Go up further. You went by the one.
Where?
Right there.
Here?
Faucet-mounted water filter.
Oh, down here. $24. Faucet-mounted water filter. White. Okay. But I don't know if that cleans out the fluoride, though.
Oh, you have to have this one.
This one?
What's that? Reverse.
Osmosis Ultra Filtration.
Oh, that's maybe for a house.
Yeah. That's all right. That's got, you want, you kind of want all your water fluoride-free if you can. But here's one. Countertop Replacement Double Fluoride Water Filter. Countertop. Replaceable double fluoride water, $129.
That's the filter.
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting, though. Anyway, you might want to check that out for yourself, because we'll figure out. Is it fluoride filter? Let's see what this is. Countertop sink. Reverse osmosis. Which one? Refrigerator?
Hmm. Oh, that's for a refrigerator that has the...
Oh, yeah. You want that.
Countertop, maybe.
Countertop. Okay. That's this. Huh. Countertop replaceable, $129. You get two, it looks like you get two filters or something. Well, anyway.
Check it out, folks.
We'll look at it again, too. But it might be interesting to you. Fluoride-free chemical filters, which is a good idea. So anyway,
let's go back and see what else happens.
So that's kind of silly, isn't it? You can check that out on Infowars.com, by the way, for that article.
So the roadway is very practical.
Yeah.
Probably getting power and energy from that.
Prototype solar
one. Oh, Establishing Media pushes brain-eating vaccines.
Oh, that's good to hear. Let's check this
out. Establishment Media and the Scientific Dictatorship are promoting brain-eating vaccines that virtually lobotomize people and rewire their minds in a state of subservient compliance so that their natural instinct to get angry and rebel against the tyranny being imposed upon them is neutered and sterilized. Academics say they are close to developing the first vaccine for stress, a single jab that would help us relax without slowing down, reports the Daily Mail. Dr. Robert Spolsky, professor of neuroscience at Stanford University in California, says the vaccine is intended to impose a state of focused calm by altering brain chemistry. The proposal ominously harks back to George Lucas's 1971 dystopian chiller THX-1138, in which the population is controlled and subjugated through the use of special drugs to suppress emotion.
You know, it's funny. George Lucas, Ted Turner, Gates, Bill Gates, and Warren Buffett are all giving most of their money to charities, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But we already know that Bill Gates is giving his money toward vaccines, which he states is slowing the population growth,
mm-hmm.
all right? Because what it's doing is he's giving AIDS vaccines, which are actually giving people live AIDS, right?
Making them sick.
Making them sick, so he's killing off, you know, the third world, right? Warren Buffett, you know, is giving, has given the money, to, has put his money in with Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both killing off the world, all right? And now you got Ted Turner, who says that everybody else but him, okay, are useless feeders, okay, and should be eliminated, all right? Everybody should die, who, you know,
nice
who isn't a billionaire, all right? And then you got, who's the, there's another billionaire too, Gates, Buffett, oh, Bloomberg, another great humanitarian, you know, Bloomberg, all right, who's probably, you know, he's given up his money, all of his money in Bloomberg, but, you know, I don't see it. I don't see
no.
it. You know, the man is into everybody. I mean, he's got the Bloomberg News, you know, factory going there, and it's just like he's probably the most plugged-in man in the world, plus he's the mayor of New York City. And
well,
you
know he's plugged in.
And, yeah, you know, I wouldn't trust Bloomberg as far as I could throw him. So,
but anyway, we're just about at that time for our interview.
Yeah, we are at that time, actually. So our interview is with a lady named Sonia from truthergirls.com. And the way we got to know her was she actually contacted me for an interview on my new book, Naked at the Mic, The Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril. And
She's
going
to interview you on Monday.
She's going to be interviewing me on her program on Monday, truthergirls.com
American Freedom Radio.
Thank you, American Freedom Radio. You can get that. It's got American Freedom. Or go to truthergirls.com and hit American Freedom Radio, and then go into that. That gets you into their program. So. That'll be at 7 o'clock on Monday night. Eastern Standard, right. So we're going to go to that right now. And it's about half an hour. I think you'll enjoy her.
Yeah,
and
she's
again,
very nice. It's like talking to a friend. She's very knowledgeable and she's very relaxed, easy to talk to.
And
has some interesting things to say.
Yeah. So I hope you'll enjoy that. And it's about half an hour. And we'll be back right after that.
Okay, and I really don't know much about them except they're from Montreal, Canada. They are very active in the truth movement. And they've interviewed many people on their radio show, which is on the internet. And she also has a blog. And I guess she's with us. Good evening, Sonia.
Good evening. Hi.
Hi, I'm Lila. I'm Leo's co-host.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure that you knew to whom you were speaking. We're very pleased to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me on. Yeah. Layla or Lila?
Lila.
Lila.
And I wanted you maybe to tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself.
Are we on the air already?
Yes, we are.
Sorry.
Okay.
I didn't know. About myself, okay, well, I had, how could this all start? This all started with, I guess I put up a YouTube channel about a year ago called The Truther Girls, and it was meant to be truth, but sort of as performance art. You know, we were talking about issues in the truth movement, but in a kind of lighthearted way, kind of making fun of ourselves, being a little nutty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, I had started a website, which was called naturalbaby.info before, but now it's thetruthergirls.com. I had known about 9/11 being an inside job for years, but I just didn't realize the extent to which lies are have overtaken every aspect of our society and our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my son, and I'd given him a bunch of vaccines, and he had a bad reaction to one of them, and I started looking into vaccines, and that sort of sent me down the rabbit hole. And so I started putting all this information, not only about vaccines, but other things related to parenting. I started just, you know, collect this information and put some of it into articles, and I just put it on this website. And then later on, I started the YouTube channel, The Truther Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become like a collaborative kind of project, even though it's mostly mine, but I've had other women and some guys participate in it too.
Oh, good for you. And you're located in Montreal?
In Montreal, yeah. Now I have a radio show on American Freedom Radio. It's called The Truth or Girls as well.
And do you have a partner?
Yeah, my co-host is Karen.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be co-hosting with me through the summer, and then it'll just be me in the fall. She'll be back at school.
Oh, okay, good.
Well, we were, of course, I was really after looking at a couple of your programs, and I noticed that you had Edward Griffin on Monday or yesterday, I believe. Did you, Edward Griffin?
Yep, Edward Griffin. Yeah, we talked to him and Mike Murphy about their new documentary, What in the World Are They Spraying? I think a lot of people have been waiting for something like that to come out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been doing this for, I don't know, we've been talking about chemtrails now for at least, I'd say about 6 years on this program.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've had a lot of experts and Clifford Carncom and everybody else on. But we're... you know, and there are some great documentaries out there. But I'm glad, and I was surprised actually that Griffin did. But have you been involved with chemtrails for quite a while? Have you, or is this something more recent that you've discovered them? Or
no, I've known about them for a few years now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were drawn to my attention by my husband. Mm-hmm. Sorry, who one day he just said, they've been spraying all morning, and it says, spraying, what are you talking about, you know?
Right.
I never noticed. And he showed me, look out the window, there's like a grid outside the window.
Mm.
And I said, well, what do you think they're spraying? And, you know, sorry, he said, well, I don't know, but whatever it is, I don't think it's good. And then we started looking into this, and I you know, did research on geoengineering and found that there were documents going back to even the 90s and the early 2000s, talking about how they're going to mitigate global warming with geoengineering. So to me, it seemed logical that they're doing some kind of geoengineering and they're just not being open about it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No question about it. But we were, I was curious as to how you, how large the truth movement is out there. And I was kind of surprised about the 911 Montreal or Montreal Truth Movement or whatever it was.
Yeah, Montreal 911 Truth.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was very surprised at that, and I was surprised at the how involved Canada. There's a lot of people involved with this movement all around Canada, because mostly it was an American, you know, issue, you know, 911 was, but I was grateful to see Canada, or so many Canadian, especially young people in Canada.
Yeah, is it around the university,
yeah,
or around McGill?
Yeah, where did it start there? Who actually started the site and other sites in Canada, you know, focusing on the 911?
Well, there are a lot of truth groups in Canada, and 9/11, although it happened in the States, it's very relevant to us up here because we're also involved in the war that was based on a lie, and a lot of the you know, advancements and enhancements in security,
right,
that were, you know, initiatives of the U.S. government, they also affect us here.
Right.
You know, we're just right next to you, and it's not like this doesn't concern us. And so we know about the New World Order, and we know 9/11 was an inside job, and we think people should know, and especially with 9/11, because that was really, you know, the catalyst for taking the New World Order to the next level.
That's right.
So some of these groups are called 9/11 Truth. They got Montreal 9/11 Truth here, which was started by Mike Penguay, and they have a website, Montreal911Truth.org, and they host speakers. So they have, you know, lectures that they set up so people can come and hear different people speak. Like they hosted the, it was the World 9/11 Truth, which is, you know, they're all in some ways connected, but I think it was World 9/11 Truth who hosted the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth conference here at the beginning of May.
Right.
With Richard Gage and Dr. Griffin.
Yeah, we've had both of them on the show, and over the years I've had David on probably... I think we were the first radio show to have him, that he ever did. which was really funny. And the night that he was retiring from the university in Claremont, we had him on. And he had just finished his last lecture there, and we were talking to him in his office, yeah. From his office.
He was an excellent guest.
Yeah, he was a great guest. And we had him on a number of times ever since. But he was the first, actually, to come out with a book. And
he made such a succinct case. He really.
And now he's got, I believe he's got two more books out. Which was the one, like, the one that you spoke to him on? Was that his latest book?
Well, when I talked to him, we mentioned his, I mean, he mentioned his books a bit, but we were talking about the conference that was coming up.
No,
he did mention a couple of books.
Yeah.
I can't remember the titles offhand, to be honest with you.
Well, his first one was the Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah. Right.
The New Pearl Harbor. The second book was New Pearl Harbor Revisited, I think.
Yeah.
And then he's got a new one out.
I don't know what the title of the new one is.
Three of them now. But he really he really started off in 2004, and it was really funny with that too. You'd probably be interested to know. His publicist told me that she sent out over 500 copies of that book. And not one person, not one media outlet at that
responded.
Time would touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in 2004. We were the first ones to respond. It was interesting, though.
Well, yeah, it's not really surprising that they would kind of try to blacklist him.
No, but at that time it was.
It was like that. But then he ended up making it to a list. I can't remember what the name of the list was, but it was a very prestigious, reputable list of, you know, picks of a publishing house or something. And because of that, then his book had to get, you know, got a lot more.
Well, actually, no. Quite frankly, it was Jimmy Walters was a huge. He was a philanthropist, and he
put a lot of money behind
that. He set up the 911 omission commission down in Manhattan Center, which we filmed back in 2004, I believe, or 2005. And he put millions of his own money behind the movement.
Okay.
Exposing it, and he offered $1 million reward on it. He's got his site is for anybody at all interested. His site is reopen911.org, and he offered $1 million to anybody who could prove that that the trade centers did not fall from demolition. Okay. To prove that they, in other words, nobody could prove it. Nobody could prove it. And all of the scholars for 911 Truth backed him up, okay? But he bought, I don't know how many, hundreds of, maybe 100,000 books, all right, and sent them to everybody, okay, the 911 Truth, the New Pearl Harbor book, okay? And he put them in a basket. And I don't know if you seen the In Plain Sight video by Dave Von Kleist, Power Hour.
I did see it. You know, I know about 9/11, and I was there at the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth Conference in Montreal. When I had David Ray Griffin and Richard Gage on, we talked more about the upcoming conference and about spreading awareness that's been spreading about 9/11 and about things like cognitive infiltration. Mm-hmm. We talked about things like that more. My area of research is more things to do with, like, flu vaccines, you know?
Oh.
So I'm not, I'm no expert here on the physics of 9/11, you know, mm-hmm. but I know enough to know that it was a demolition.
Oh, but the fascinating thing was is after... Yeah, after that, when Jimmy Walters got involved with it and put some big money behind it, all right, behind the movement, then he circulated. He made the video In Plain Sight, as well as the book, took off. You know, and David Griffin and Dave Von Kleist did very well from that. So found hundreds and hundreds of thousands of books after that.
And brought a lot of information to a lot of people, which was really a wonderful thing. And the movement is where it is today because
Unfortunately, Jimmy was kind of expatriated from the movement. He got kind of blistered by the media, by the mainstream media on it. But nevertheless,
I was wondering, how long have you been on your radio show? How long has that been?
The radio show since February.
Of this past year?
Yeah, since February.
Okay, have you had a favorite guest that you on the show, somebody that really stands out in your mind?
Well, definitely talking to Dr. Griffin was a highlight, and also to Richard Gage and G. Edward Griffin. I had Daryl Sims on, I got to tell you, that was interesting, too. He's a former cop who he was in forensics, and now he does alien forensics. So that's a topic that I don't really get into usually very much, aliens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that was interesting for me. That was something unusual. I mean, I've had a lot of different people on, different, you know, radio hosts and YouTubers. Oh, Dr. Shiv Chopra from Health Canada, that was great because he was working for Health Canada at the time when they were trying to approve recombinant bovine growth hormone in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And he and a couple of his colleagues were able to prevent this from being approved. And as a result, they ended up actually being fired for it. But because of that, the Canadian farmers never did come to use the Monsanto product in their own cows, except that we get a lot of imported milk from the U.S., so we don't really know. Like, some of our milk products have it in it, but it's not approved for use in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But I talked to him. We talked about vaccines because he had been personally responsible for approving measles, a mumps, and a rubella vaccine in Canada. And he explained to me how when you take foreign proteins from an animal, such as what we have in vaccines, and you inject that, this is totally against nature. This is not meant to be injected into your body, and it can produce an autoimmune disease because your body recognizes these proteins as something that's similar to what's native to its own body and can develop antibodies to that. Because whatever you're injecting, your body will, you know, have an antibody reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Dr. Cass Ingram. I don't know if you've heard of him. I'm surprised that because he wrote a book called The Cause of Cancer, all right, Revealed, and he's a medical, he's an MD and a researcher, and he stated, and I had him on the show here many times, but he stated that the cause for cancer is vaccinations. That is what's causing them. That's what causes cancer, is because you're putting this foreign substance, okay, into your body, all right? And it's made out, and the horrendous things that they make these vaccinations out of.
Oh, yeah.
Monkey
kidneys and sheep kidneys, gonads, bovine serum.
Oh, terrible stuff.
And eggs, albumin from the eggs and stuff like this. So he says you're putting in stuff for the avian viruses. He says you're putting in, monkey viruses. He says any kind of, all these animals that they're using to make the vaccine, he says, are contaminating your body.
Well, that's right, because what they do is, for example, with flu vaccine, and where they use chicken eggs,
right?
They'll say specific pathogen free, but what that means is they test it for about 30 pathogens, not every pathogen in the world. They don't even know. They wouldn't even know what else could be in there. So they test for about 30 of them. And if those aren't in there, then that's okay. But there are viruses that are called oncoviruses that are known to cause cancer. And they've been found in vaccines even recently. There's one, it's a bird virus. I can't remember the name offhand. But it was in a couple of things that were contaminated recently were a rotavirus vaccine, two of them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Rotarix and Rotatec, and a measles vaccine was found to be contaminated with a bird virus that's an oncovirus, so a cancer-causing virus in the measles vaccine. So this happens. I mean, this has been going on since the beginning.
Right.
Mm-hmm. FV40, which was a monkey virus that causes cancer, but that doesn't mean that just because they found FV40 and they know that that one causes cancer and they screened for it, that that was the only one.
Well, the other thing, probably one of the most frightening things, is that the polio vaccination, okay, was not a cure for polio. And, you know, what
it was the improvement in dealing with sanitation.
In public sanitation.
Yeah.
All right. When they started, yeah. I mean, prior to 1940, actually, I mean, everyone had outhouses. There wasn't really much public, there weren't really...
people weren't aware of...
public sewers.
Yeah.
Okay, the sewer systems were not up to stuff. And a lot of sewage went into the waterways and into
where people swam and
right.
where people used the
which
water.
Which is how...
Roosevelt,
he got Canterbury.
At that same time that the polio vaccination came out, the sanitation had improved by light years, okay, from what it had, you know, just 10 years prior. So once they've installed public sewer systems and people started getting indoor plumbing and this kind of thing, the cases immediately dropped anyway, all right? But then they were attributed to this vaccination, but the vaccination was really not that effective.
But in combination with these vaccinations is the media stoking the fear of the public.
Yeah.
And people get so frightened and so afraid they take these vaccinations because they don't know what else to do, and they're not informed or educated about the problems.
Like with the H1N1, you must have done something on that, I'm sure.
A lot, yeah,
yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
But just with the polio vaccine, just one other thing I'd like to add to that.
Right.
Another clever trick they played was they completely revamped the diagnostic criteria.
There you go.
So that before that, if you had weakness or paralysis that lasted any length of time, you went to your doctor, they'd say it's polio.
Right.
And after that, it had to be weakness or paralysis that lasted over 60 days and was confirmed by laboratory culture. So just from that alone, the diagnosis of polio went down by 90%.
Right.
And it was replaced with diagnosis of things like viral meningitis. Or infantile or flaccid paralysis. They still have those diagnoses out there. People still get these things. They just don't call it polio anymore. So that had a lot to do with it.
Well, the other thing that surprised me, and I don't know if you're researching this or not, but especially the mad cow, okay,
mm-hmm.
is still prevalent in our meat supply. It's just not talked about.
Mm.
And I've had Cass Ingram again on our show at one time said that we spoke about the mad cow issue for the whole show because he's saying that what's happened is that there are continually reports of this in the meat supply.
Disease.
But the FDA, EPA and FDA and all the government agencies are strictly and utterly ignoring them. Okay, and they don't want to hear about them, and their vets have been reporting this stuff and others, and this stuff's in our meat supply.
Now, is Canada allowed to, import meat from the United States?
I would imagine that we do.
Yeah.
I know we get lamb from New Zealand, but I don't really, you know, it doesn't say on the meat package where our meat comes from, so I really don't know. I think it's pretty gross. I'm practically vegetarian by default because everything is so disgusting. I usually, if I do buy meat, I try to buy it from a local butcher who has a kind of humane farm. It's not labeled organic, but they don't give antibiotics or hormones, and the animals are grass-fed in the summer and things like that. So I try to get my meat from him as much as possible.
Well,
the rest of the time, we just don't even eat it anymore.
But now, though, what they've done is they've allowed cloning, okay, the cloned animals. And a lot of your beef cattle and your dairy cattle are cloned, all right? And
there's no indication of that either.
There's no indication, there's no labeling or anything, and they've been fighting this for years. But now that they're, I mean, pork and lamb.
And they're all fed genetically modified.
Genetically modified corn
and
growth hormones and everything else.
Oh, it's crazy, isn't
yeah.
it? It's like,
it really is.
A lot of my videos that I make, they have to do with food and the fact that you can't even find, like, normal stuff to eat anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Now the DSM comes out and gives you a label. If you're worried about what you're eating, you know, maybe you have orthorexia.
Isn't that cute, huh?
I mean, you go to the grocery store and you pick up something and it says contains spices. You're like, okay, spices are good. But it turns out that spices is just another name for MSG because nobody wants MSG.
Right.
Name it something soy protein isolate, and then you just don't even know what you're eating. So you start wanting to get organic food and, it's pretty nuts. Like, if you want to eat stuff that's not poisonous, you really have to go out of your way. It's enough to make you feel a little nuts.
Well, even if you get organic food, they're chemtrailing, and that's falling down on it, whether it's organic or not.
True, true. It's all true.
That's going into the soil.
You know, that chemtrail stuff is absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
And they recently approved, or it was like last year they approved, a pig that's genetically modified with a mouse gene so that it doesn't poop so much.
Oh, my God.
Or no, so that the poop isn't so bad for the environment. It's totally crazy.
Oh, God.
I don't know how these people get to do what they're doing.
Yeah, what are these scientists? Mad.
They're mad scientists.
Madness.
Totally. Well, you know, they have connections in high places, I guess, who are proving their work. Because, you know, you have good scientists who are saying, no, we can't do this. Look, there was a scientist in Scotland early on with the GMO thing. I don't remember his name now off the top of my head. But he's in the book Seeds of Destruction by F. William Engdahl. So he was talking about how there's a scientist in Scotland who was testing GMO potatoes on rats.
Mm-hmm.
And he found that they had all kinds of organ damage and their brains were shrinking and everything,
it
was horrible. And he went on a talk show and he announced his findings, but even left out the part about the brains because he didn't want to freak people out completely. And his boss was like, oh, good job, whatever his name is, patting him on the back. And a few days later, he gets noticed that, he has to resign to do it voluntarily or he'll just be fired without pay.
Well,
and
like,
then from then on, he was just blacklisted. And it went so far as, Monsanto calling the U.S. government and saying, get rid of this guy.
Yeah.
That's the kind of strings they can pull.
Well, the guy who invented the microwave, oven, he was from Switzerland or Sweden, I believe, Sweden or Switzerland. And he came out and said, this thing kills people. This thing emits radiation. This thing destroys the integrity of the food, all right, that you're putting in there. And he says, don't buy the microwave, okay? And of course, he was tell the microwave industry not to do it, right? Well, at that point, he came out with that, and of course, they censored him.
Mm-hmm.
And later he came out again this was about 5 years ago, three or 4 years ago, where he came out and published the work again. And he's retired now, and they tried to censor him. We read the article on the show when it came out, but the frightening thing is that what microwaving does, all right, is disintegrates deteriorates the integrity of the actual food. So what it corrodes or corrupts the fiber, all right, of the food, the fiber of your meat or whatever it may be. And he says it's very bad for you. It's very, very bad for you. And but we still microwave, and microwaving food is like,
part of the the modern world.
Yeah.
I had a microwave once, and I only used it to heat water. But unfortunately, I always, even before I had any idea how bad it really was, I always thought that food that you made in the microwave was gross. It came out all mushy, and I never understood why people would want to use that. I mean, to boil water, give me a break. You put it on the stove. I went to my co-host Karen. Okay, I went to her place one day, and she had a microwave there, and I said, I wanted to make some tea or something, and so she goes to put it in the microwave. I'm, no, let me do it on the stove, and she was surprised, you could do that. I wanted to reheat some food, I think, and she was going to put it in the microwave. I just, no, you just put it in a pot. She's like, oh, it works. Like, no kidding, So people grow up with microwaves.
Well, what do you do? What do you do for popcorn? Do you eat popcorn?
No.
It's all genetically modified.
I wouldn't. I had popcorn a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
At the birthday party of one of my friends, my son's friends, and it tasted bitter. And And you know what? Well, for one, maybe it's GM popcorn, yeah.
Okay.
And two, there's probably canola oil on it. And canola
oh.
oil is another weird story.
I saw your report on that, yes.
Yeah, it's a weird case because the canola oil does lower your cholesterol, but there's something else going on there besides the fact that it's genetically modified. Because when they gave it in formula to pigs, they did a study in Japan and the piglets died.
Oh.
And then they replicated the study, and they got the same kind of results in Canada, and they found that it depleted them of vitamin E. And on the other hand, statin drugs, they also lower your cholesterol, but that doesn't mean they're going to extend your life. So, because they also deplete you of coenzyme Q10, which is what helps vitamin E be an antioxidant. You know, the E will act as an antioxidant, and then it'll become oxidative or whatever, but then the coenzyme Q10, you know, corrects it so then it can continue to be an antioxidant. So if you mess with anything in that process, and, you know, you could have a really bad result down the road.
Right.
So they tested the canola oil on people who had you know, hypercholesterolemia in the family, so they produce too much cholesterol, and their cholesterol went down. But they never look at what happens to these people way down the road. What are the health outcomes in the end? Because
mm-hmm.
there's other ways of bringing your cholesterol down naturally.
Yeah.
Well, they deal with everything in isolation.
Yeah.
Instead of dealing with the whole, they deal with the one piece that they're interested in.
That's it. So they say, oh, well, cholesterol went down.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful health product.
Yeah.
But we don't really know. If it's even maybe dangerous, apart from the fact that it's genetically modified, maybe it is dangerous, you know, because look what it did to the piglets.
But
yeah.
I think it's important.
And they're close to our DNA.
I think it's important that you tell them what canola oil stands for. What is
Canadian oil low acid?
I know.
I never knew that.
Everyone thinks it's from a plant. You know?
No, it's from the canola plant because
right.
they renamed a hybridized rapeseed plant. They renamed it canola because rape's not the most appealing name for a food.
Right.
So then they tried to come up with something else. So they came up with an acronym. Low erucic acid rape. Lear. Well, Lear isn't any better. You know, like,
Lear
oil, rape oil, great. You know, it's just like, it's perfect for the pervert's cupboard, right?
Yeah, you
so
want that.
They ended up renaming it canola. And so they have a lot of nerve. See, I don't have any proof that canola oil will actually kill you, as I say, but I didn't actually claim that it will kill you, but I just said that what are they hiding? Because if you go through the Canadian Canola Council of Canada's website and you go through their FAQ, it's canola oil, it's canola rapeseed. They know it comes from the canola plant. Then they tell you later that it was a hybridized rape plant, and then they later tell you that the Europeans still refer to it as rape.
Yeah,
and then if you go to the EPA will tell you it's a rape plant. So why lie about it, you know? Let's just admit it's a rape plant. And then what else? They say it's a pesticide because it smothers insects. But because the question is it really a pesticide? But if you go to the EPA website, they'll tell you it's a pesticide. For some reason, they're not quite sure, but they suspect it's an insect irritant.
Hmm.
Of course, you know, what might be bad for the bugs could be good for you. But why lie about it?
Really.
You know,
you're hiding something.
Yeah, yeah, that's what you would think. Natural course of thinking, you would think they are, and they usually do.
I don't trust it. I don't trust any of these big industries come up with some artificially created plant, genetically modify it, and then tell us it's wonderful for our health.
And give it a new name, you know.
Give it a new name, lie about it on your website, ignore the studies that said it killed piglets, depletes them of vitamin E. It could be like the statins. Like, this is what I was saying before. See, the statins will lower your cholesterol, but you put you at higher risk for heart failure because it depletes you of coenzyme Q10.
Right.
And if it does that, then it interferes with the vitamin E's function in your body, which puts you under more, stress from the free radicals because they're not being, you don't have the vitamin E to act as an antioxidant, which speeds up aging. I mean, who knows? I'm not saying that the statins will speed up aging, but if you interfere with your antioxidants, and your, you know, coenzyme Q10, things like that, well, that's not going to be it's very good for your health.
You know, one of the troubling things that just came out recently that I thought was that 12 supplements? Have you read that? I mean, it's been all over the news everywhere.
Nope.
The 12 deadly supplements. Okay. And why?
Oh.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Well, that was in Consumer Reports.
Ugly ones.
What's that?
Ugly supplements.
Ugly supplements.
No, it was in Consumer Reports. They had a list of
vitamin supplements
that were supposedly bad for your health.
Right.
Oh, yeah, well, that wouldn't surprise me because there's been a lot of scientific literature on certain types of supplements. I didn't know there were 12 of them that were that bad.
Right.
But like beta-carotene, for example, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you eat one carrot a day, it's been shown that it cuts your risk of lung cancer from, 30 to 50%. Even if you're a smoker. But that's a carrot, especially an organic carrot might be good for you. But if you take beta-carotene, so they knew this, right? They knew that it cut lung cancer risk. So what they did was they took the artificial beta-carotene and they did studies with it, and they gave the smokers beta-carotene. And what they found was that the isolated beta-carotene increased the risk of cancer, lung cancer.
Wow.
So the carrot, which has a carotene complex, has alpha-carotene and beta-carotene and a bunch of other things, you can't compare that to the supplement, and the supplement can actually be dangerous.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, back almost 30 years ago, 25 years ago, the big thing was to take vitamin A capsules, to increase your vision and your skin condition and all, it was good for you. It was, but then if you could only take so much, because if you took too much, then what it would do is it would cause you great illness, okay, because it stores in the fat cells and, so then all of a sudden vitamin A was, no, don't take that in capsules,
Toxic, yeah, they
yeah.
had toxicity
yeah,
levels
yeah,
that
right.
you could reach with just taking supplements, yeah.
Amazing.
Well,
Sonia,
if people want to listen to you, you have a lot of knowledge, where can they listen to you and when?
On the radio, it's AmericanFreedomRadio.com,
mm-hmm.
and we're on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Good.
You just go to the radio station, and you can listen in live at that time, or you can go to listen to archived, shows in the show host. You go into the Truther Girls, and we've got an archive there. Other than that, I got my YouTube channel, where I go on rants about things like canola oil.
Okay.
Well, people can tune in and listen to you, and I hope they do.
One of the reasons, one of the big reasons was I want to thank you for inviting me on your show next week, and I wanted to mention it to our audience here that Sonia will be interviewing me on her show next week, next Monday, I believe, Monday at 6.
Yeah, Monday at 7.
Monday at 7.
We're talking about your book.
Yeah, thank you so much. And that's for those of you who already know, I've only mentioned it 3,000 times on the show, but it's Naked at the Mic, The Survival of a Living in a Time of Peril. But I want to thank you so much for that offer, and I'm glad that we got a chance to talk tonight. And I think people will be tuning into your show. It's truthergirls.com.
Well, thetruthergirls.com is my website, and
right.
thank you for agreeing to come on my show. I'm really looking forward to that,
oh,
by
cool.
the way. It's thetruthergirls.com is my website, you may find...
American Freedom Radio.
Yeah, American Freedom Radio is where we have guests on, and
right.
It's interesting. We do a lot of different kind of stuff on the show, cover news and have guests on, too. And if you're looking for some truther-oriented entertainment, that would be the YouTube channel. Because, like I said, it's kind of performance artist activism, so you might find some weird stuff on there.
Well, we always are interested in a variety of things, and so
yeah,
are our listeners.
And there's a lot of people on your American Freedom Radio as well that are fascinating. Some fascinating company there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
thank you very much for being with us tonight. And we hope to have
yeah.
you on again, and
yeah.
We look forward to listening to your interview on Leo on 7 o'clock Monday on his book on American Freedom Radio.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much, Sonia.
All right,
good night, Sonia.
Good night.
That was Sonia from American Freedom Radio, and it's the top of the hour, Leo.
And we're going to, don't forget, we will be interviewing, she'll be interviewing me, actually, on our show. on American Freedom Radio, The Truth of Girls. And that's on Monday night at next Monday at 7 o'clock. And they are out of Montreal, Canada.
Yeah, give the station ID, will
you? Okay. So I want to, that was the end of that interview. And again, don't forget, I will be interviewed by Sonia on her show, The Truth of Girls. And that's at AmericanFreedomRadio.com on Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So hope to see you all there, and hope that maybe we can possibly I can record that interview and replay it. But I want to thank everybody, and have a pleasant evening, and join us tomorrow night when we delve into the fourth dimension. Good night.